Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talk to Sarah Wilmer, who is the Women's Community Development Coordinator of HIV/AIDS Research and Community Health, or ARCH. She's also the point of contact for the Sex Workers Ally Group, which wants to promote better health, better safety, and more respect for sex workers. With doctor-assisted death now law and marijuana legalization coming next summer, sex work may be the last taboo to be brought into the fold of mainstream society, and this is the right time to talk about it, as I'll explain in a minute. Rethinking sex work is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, I don't want to phrase a discussion of this importance and complexity with where the mainstream media typically begins, which is a kind of shock and surprise that sex work and sex workers exist in our quaint little world here in southwestern Ontario. It happens, and truthfully, you don't have to look hard to find it. On top of that, it seems to be an open secret about what goes on in our local hotels and massage parlors, but the thing about an open secret is that it's still a secret. That brings us to Sarah Wilmer and SWAG, the Sex Workers Allies Group. SWAG engages community organizations, public agencies, and individuals with lived experience in a collaborative effort to improve the systems and conditions that marginalize sex workers in Guelph and Wellington County. Their goals include supporting individuals with lived experience of sex work, improving services and access to services for sex workers, increasing health, safety, and well-being of sex workers, and reducing the stigma around sex work and sex workers. None of these are easy things to achieve, even in our enlightened day and age. Now, the timely part. Sunday, December 17th, is the International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers. It began as a way to memorialize the victims of Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, who was convicted of murdering 48 women, including several sex workers, runaways, and women from other vulnerable groups in Washington State in the 80s and 90s. In 2017, this is a global commemoration that calls attention to hate crimes committed against sex workers worldwide, as well as the need to remove the social stigma and discrimination that have contributed to violence against sex workers and indifference from the communities they are a part of. In other words, sex workers are victims twice over because of the violence they suffer and also because of how they often feel they have no recourse for justice. Some, though, are working to change that every day, like Sarah Wilmer. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, we hear from Sarah on her work with SWAG and the efforts to erase the stigma from sex work. We talk about the challenges sex workers face, the difficulty in separating sex work from human trafficking, why it's so difficult to create compassion for those engaged in sex work, and what this group needs from the law and from government in order to create more safety for them, and whether complete legalization of sex work is an option. So I caught up with Sarah Wilmer this week in studio. So Sarah Wilmer, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So your job is technically the Women's Community Development Coordinator at ARCH.
Mm-hmm.
How does what you do with the Sex Workers Ally Group, is that technically a part of it, or is that something you took on, or how does all that fit in?
Yeah, well, it falls within my role at ARCH. The Sex Workers Ally Group started actually before I came into this position, so it had been established a little bit prior to me. But it kind of fits in because we're trying to bring awareness and end stigma for folks who may be more of a marginalized community, and specifically around sex work, we're trying to connect with people who may be at heightened risk or heightened vulnerability for HIV. And sometimes sex workers may face increased risk due to systemic risk factors for HIV.
Right.
So it kind of fits in there, but that's not necessarily always the case. A lot of times we're just really trying to build community, connect with folks who may be more marginalized or may be receiving stigma when they are accessing healthcare systems. So we just kind of came together. The Sex Workers Ally Group is a combination of quite a few different agencies, folks with lived experience, community members, and we've come together as a collective to try to address some of the challenges for sex workers in our community.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of it fits in. It's more about promoting health, promoting community wellness, and making sure that we're able to amplify some of those voices in our community.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not concerned with the legal side of sex work. That you're purely about promoting health, promoting better well-being, making sure that the sex workers themselves can get access to help when they need help, if they need help. Mm-hmm. But the legal stuff, that's another department, as it were.
Well, the legal stuff definitely comes up because you can't talk about safety for sex workers if you're not necessarily talking about the legal system,
yeah,
how it's supporting or not helping folks. So the political piece does come into it. We are up to date on most of the legality surrounding sex work, and then we also, as a collective, try to think about what direction we want to go. So we are thinking about what is our stance on decriminalization, what do we want to present to the community, what is our stance on decriminalization. So we are definitely working around the legal aspect of it too, and I think that just kind of comes hand in hand with being a good ally or being a good advocate. We are on the political side, and we're also in the wellness side. So I think it's kind of all intertwined.
Mm-hmm. I think looking at sex work, and speaking of the politics of it, this is a political podcast, but you know, we're in a day and age now where we have doctor-assisted death is legal. That was a taboo. That is now on its way out. We have legalization of marijuana coming, drug use. That taboo seems to be going out. It seems that sex work is almost the last of these sort of taboo, these like morally legal gray areas that has yet to, you know, been addressed. I mean, there was an attempt with that higher court ruling a couple of years ago that said, you know what, maybe the law needs to change, but I guess the government at the time was less than willing. So in terms of, you know, your work, how hard is it to end this, to mitigate the stigma, to end the stigma, to overcome it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. It can be a challenge. It depends on people's own personal perspectives on things. It depends also like the different systems of oppression that continually a lot of sex workers are facing, whether that be ableism, classism, mm-hmm. racism, colonialism, transphobia. All of these things are all intertwined around the issue of sex work. So I think that breaking down the stigma isn't just breaking down the stigma related to sex work. It's also addressing all of these systems that continually oppress folks.
Right.
And I think also a lot of times we're working with service providers to make sure services are more inclusive, but people carry their own politics into work, as everyone knows. So I think it's having these open discussions, having this educational piece and trying to work alongside people to kind of talk about stigma, how it can negatively affect people's health, how it can negatively affect people's mental health. So the stigma can be challenging, but a lot of times there's some really great discussions. People are quite open to talking and trying to think of how we can better support our community.
A big piece of this, though, is sex itself.
Mm-hmm.
Sex itself is still, in a way, stigmatized. And, you know, you think back to a couple of years ago when the Ontario government changed the sex ed curriculum, and there was a huge outcry because, the Ministry of Education was proposing a system where, you know, children learned the proper names of human sexual anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that doesn't have much to do with the workers themselves, but, I mean, that is stigmatizing sex as well.
Yeah, and there's lots of, like, a lot of folks get really, you say the word sex and people get a little nervous, anxious. And I think it's just that sex-positive aspect, right? And a lot of people haven't necessarily been exposed to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, the school system didn't necessarily prepare people to have open and frank discussions around sex. And it's probably definitely led into the stigma that contributes to sex work is that fear around, oh, even just talking about sex or selling sex or using sex as a career. These are all different things that people aren't necessarily always open to or haven't heard about or have very outdated conceptions of it. So,
right. Yeah. One of the reasons I wanted to talk with you is I see the news stories when this comes up and sex work, not just sex work, but human trafficking, which mm-hmm. we'll get into talking about as two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
But the story always seems to begin with this sort of like Helen Lovejoy moment. Like, you know, there are sex workers in our area here in Vaughan, southwestern Ontario, in the mm-hmm. Waterloo, Wellington area. So let's just establish there are sex workers working in our community.
Yes.
And that's the way it is. What is life like for I don't know if there's such a thing as the average sex worker, but, you know, in terms of, you know, how they live, how they make a living, how they get by, what's life like for them in your experience?
Yeah, I guess that's quite a complex question because there's so many different experiences, and I feel like there isn't an average.
Sure.
There's so many different experiences around sex work. There's so many different ways that people navigate the system. There's different ways that people support themselves. And sex work can look very, very different for some people. Mm-hmm. Some people don't necessarily even connect with the term sex work. So it's kind of difficult to paint it with one voice when there are so many different voices and experiences around sex work.
Mm-hmm.
People do sex work for different reasons. For some people, it's a great way to make money. It's a great way to support them or their family. Or for some people, it might be more of an exchange. Some people do sex work in exchange for housing or for goods or for drugs. So there's many different stories and narratives around sex work. So it's not I wouldn't say that there's necessarily one picture.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of different diverse experiences. So,
and that, of course, plays into the stigma, too, that it's, you know, the seedy hotel, the, you know, the body house that, you know, out in the industrial area. And that exists too, but, you know, there's incredible diversity in the sex work field. And, you know, it's just as common that there might be something next door in your quote unquote upper middle class neighborhood as there is, you know, maybe out on, you know, the highway at the hotel.
Yeah, sex work can be happening in many different ways. It can look very different for different people.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen at different locations. And location is also an issue around safety for some folks as well.
Mm-hmm. And talking about this, it makes me think there are levels of stigma, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a socioeconomic stigma if you're a sex worker, you know, working out of a hotel. But there's also that if you are, you know, someone who's identifies more as middle class, that, you know, oh, you make your living this way, that kind of thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think that stigma can come from many different forms. And I think the main important piece is to also push for the human rights aspect of it, making sure that everyone has access to safe work, safe employment, if that's what they're looking for, and just kind of how we can better support the system as a community.
Mm-hmm. Now, having said all that, one of the reasons we're talking right now is International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers is coming up. So one of the other reasons to end the stigma is because sex workers find themselves unusually, I guess, at risk for violence because of that stigma. Because I guess the perception is if you're a sex worker, you're less likely to go to the police.
Yeah, there is some challenges, especially around reporting violence, and there is still some criminality around sex work. So sometimes reporting violence can be a big challenge. Also, just systems of oppression can also impact levels of violence. And then also, like I said, location where folks are working might also create or increase risks of violence. So I would say that there's a few different reasons why sex workers may face increased risk of violence. Sex work isn't necessarily inherently violent.
Right.
It's just different systems that aren't working, stigma that goes alongside, and also some criminalization or challenges around reporting.
Right. The vast majority of people who use the services of sex workers aren't going for the point of being violent, but there is the flip side of it, too, is that, you know, you're regularly meeting with strangers. You have to, you know, you're regularly meeting in a private circumstance. It's a bit different than meeting someone in a coffee shop or meeting someone at the store, if you work at a coffee shop or a store. So it requires a certain, I guess, a level of trust and faith in meeting the stranger, that they don't have the wrong intention or the intention to do violence. And, you know, that is not always the case. There's a little bit more danger in what they do because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there can definitely be increased risk of violence potentially from clients, but there's also potential from violence from other folks in people's lives as well.
Sure.
So, you know, it could be a partner, it could be someone from the community, it could be other sex workers. There's many different forms of violence that might affect people. But like you mentioned, the stigma and criminalization can definitely make it unsafe.
It seems like they all go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
That if you reduce the stigmatization, you reduce the likelihood of violence or the percentage of sex workers that experience violence. But I wonder, hand in hand in that, reducing the sort of legal cost, as it were, to sex workers. And perhaps this gets into areas of legalization of sex work or decriminalization of sex work. What part does that play in sort of the goal to destigmatize that the legal end of it? Is that something society should be working towards, is legalizing sex work or decriminalizing it?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a
big question.
A big question. And a lot, so many different sex work organizations and a lot of folks who are working on the front lines definitely push for decriminalization for a few reasons. So right now, the legality around it is clients or folks who are purchasing sex could potentially be charged. Mm-hmm. Also, for people who are living off the prevails of sex work could also be charged. And also, there's some challenges around advertising.
Yeah.
So a lot of sex work organizations, this is based on a Nordic model, and there's been some research done around the Nordic model that can lead to increased risks of violence or less negotiating power for sex workers before they do see a client. So since clients are the ones who may be penalized or may be involved with the criminal justice system if something happens, a lot of times there's less time to vet or to connect with the client. There's less time to negotiate where you will be going. And these are just a few reasons why there has been a lot of push for decriminalization from sex work-led organizations. There's some great organizations that are happening around the country, and that has been pushed. Obviously, I think that there's lots to consider around decriminalization, and I know that the last bill was updated in 2014, and I believe this new government has committed to reviewing it, especially because folks with lived experience, a lot of sex workers, are really advocating for the negative side of this of criminalization.
Right.
So I guess it's a big question, and I know that us at SWAG were definitely trying to establish our stance on it and create something that we feel comfortable presenting around decriminalization.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that, because we'll definitely be working around that.
You've mastered the art of the plug, which is very good. Yeah. What you're saying, though, is that when people talk about legalization, they go, well, why can't we just do like Amsterdam and the red light district? And what you're saying is that, you know, practically speaking, there are problems with that as well. And so there's, you know, I hate to make the comparison, but, you know, when you're talking about legalization of marijuana, you can look to places that have done it successfully, like Colorado. Mm-hmm. What it sounds like is that, you know, there's maybe no place we can look to say that has successfully legal, or maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, actually, there's a few. There's a few good examples. So I mentioned that we're on the Nordic model, and there's a few other countries that are also on the Nordic model. But New Zealand and Australia have done some really interesting, exciting things around legality of sex work. And there's this great TED Talk that talks about the different systems of legality and decriminalization around sex work. So I really encourage folks to kind of, if you want to get a good sense of the legal system or how the world is managing or I guess implementing policy and laws around sex work.
Sure.
There's some really interesting things happening there. And so Australia and New Zealand have a very interesting model.
Well, can you say what that model is? Mm-hmm.
I believe that, I don't know the intricacies of
sure.
it, but it is more of like a decriminalization model.
Okay.
So there's a difference between decriminalization and legalization. So sometimes when you do legalization, there's other side effects, or there's other components that come into play.
Right.
So if you legalize it, then you can also make certain requirements that have to happen.
Right.
So say for legalization, it might be like, oh, you have to have a license, and this license costs $500, or you have to adhere to testing this amount of times a year. Or like, there's sometimes legalization isn't always the best, so decriminalization can also help reduce some of that stigma, reduce some of those legal implications, but not necessarily have those regulations that sometimes come with legalization.
Mm.
So it
gives more power to the sex workers, is what it sounds
like. Yeah, yeah, and there's lots of nuances in there, but but it's definitely something that Canada should be and is revisiting.
Mm-hmm. Good enough.
I hope I answered your question all right.
No, I think that's. I mean, I think for basic, you know, for people listening to this and learning more about the issue, I, you know, keep it basic, and we try to go in depth, but, you know, I think we're trying to broach new ways of thinking about this issue in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that made me aware, and one of the reasons I wanted to dive into this issue. And I'll talk about me. I hate making it about me, but I'll make it about me in the sense that, but I used to work in a hotel. I used to work front desk in a hotel. Mm-hmm. And obviously sex work would go on there. Mm-hmm. And you would know the sex workers because they would be typically young women. They would be, you know, alone, paying cash, day to day. It just seems to me that we have this kind of state of sort of this is acceptable, but we all, and I include myself in this, we all turn a blind eye. We understand what's happening, but we, I guess, don't make that next step to saying, you know what, if we all know what's happening and we all know, you know, what, you know, what's going on in our hotels and what's going on with people, and people are using the services of sex workers, and, you know, there's no judgment, at least for me, as someone who was employed by the hotel, then why can't we make that next step? What's the mental block? And I guess what I'm wondering from you is, as a hotel employee, when I was a hotel employee, what's my responsibility? What was my responsibility to, you know, be on the lookout for, you know, the welfare of these people, in so much as my responsibility to look out for the welfare of anyone who was staying at the hotel. Mm-hmm. If I had any sort of more advanced responsibility, whether that is, I mean, not necessarily legal responsibility, but a moral, ethical responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big question. I don't necessarily know in that sense what your responsibility would be. You know, I guess it would just be, I don't even know if I can answer that accurately.
Yeah, no.
That's a tough question, because in different situations, maybe someone would need some additional support. But in situations, I'm sure a lot of times people don't need any additional support. It would be probably best if maybe you're not intervening. So I think it just depends on the whole situation. I'm not necessarily sure I can give you a great answer about that.
No, it's just something that's stuck in the back of my mind, and I wanted to ask an expert about it for a while.
Oh, I'm definitely someone who's
more connected in terms of working with sex workers on a regular basis than I, because, you know, certainly my point of view was, you know, let them go about their business, and that's fine. I think what I'm more thinking of is the blind eye aspect to it. Like, you know, the fact that we, you know, you can access back pages, mm-hmm. and you can see the sex workers listed there, and you can text them easily enough. And a lot of them are, I presume, their own managers, as it were, though that's not universally the case. But, you know, it just strikes me as that we kind of all accept that it's happening, in a sense. And then it's not like, I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but it's like we kind of know that it's happening, but there's some sort of block to go from, you know, what it's happening, and then making you know, I guess that block is the stigmatization, mm-hmm. that, you know, we accept that it's happening, we don't necessarily acknowledge that it's happening. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's where maybe your work comes into it, is mm-hmm. is in terms of lowering the stigma, in terms of trying to, you know, make these people feel more inclusive in the community, mm-hmm. that it's, you know, it's okay to be a sex worker.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes too with when you're talking about responsibility, when you're talking about what is your role in that. I don't necessarily know what a role in that, but I very much encourage folks to do the reading, listen to some great TED Talks, listen to readings or writings that have been done by folks who are sex working. There's some great organizations that you can read about, check out resources, learn how to better understand, say, the legal system, better understand how you can support folks, how you can work towards ending that stigma in your mm-hmm. conversations you're having with people. Mm-hmm. So I think that number one, it would be like, educate yourself, learn more, and beyond that, work towards ending that stigma and working towards human rights and rights for everyone. And I think that mm-hmm. that is probably where the work needs to be done and can be done. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's necessarily anyone's, depending on the situation, to intervene or to ever become involved in a way. I think it's more so educating yourself, educating your community, educating your friends and your family, having these discussions and kind of bringing the stigma and the human rights aspect to the table.
Right. I didn't mean to make you my father confessor there for a minute.
No, that's okay.
But I appreciate that. And again, that was one of the things that made me interested in this topic and exploring how, you know, sex workers, you know, live in our society, and trying to erase that stigma, which is how I came across SWAG. But speaking of the stigma, though, not that we haven't spoken of it already, but whose responsibility is it to help lower the stigma? I mean, I guess part of it is all of us, but there seems to be, I don't know, we kind of depend on, I think, the people who are being stigmatized to sort of help guide us in the way of eliminating the stigma, too. But, of course, it's very difficult for sex workers to come out and go, hey, I'm a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of how society at large can work towards ending the stigma, you know, how can we do that? And maybe how can sex workers play a role in helping us understand where they come from and what they do?
Yeah, and I this is a great time to talk about a lot of sex work-led organizations. A lot of times folks who are sex working are the champions, are the leaders, are the people really making the difference, which is so exciting, and that's exactly how it should be. We should really be amplifying the voices of folks with the lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that folks who have the experience, who are sex workers, who may have previously been sex workers, should be leading the movement, should be leading policy, should be leading regulations about that. But for everyday folks, too, I think it's having those conversations, you know, not necessarily shying away from them. When new laws come up, like discussing them, or when, like, say, for December 17th, just maybe learning a little bit more about the history of December 17th,
mm-hmm.
maybe learning a little bit more about what's going on in your community for December 17th. So I think it's just kind of being active, being engaged, and then also for service providers or people who are frontline workers is kind of really doing the work to break down that stigma and knowing how you can make your space more safe or welcoming for folks.
Mm-hmm. In terms of your work, we mentioned everybody kind of brings biases with them. When you started working with sex workers, you know, what did you bring with you, and how has that changed over your time working with sex workers?
I would say a lot of my work is done at a community table.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I don't necessarily know if I'm the best person to also feel like I'm answering that a lot. It's not the best person to answer this question. I feel like everyone has a right to – everyone is the experts in their own lives, and I feel like that probably hasn't changed much since I have began working, and I feel like people have avenues that work for them. People have jobs that work for them, and I think that – I don't know if it's necessarily shifted or changed too much since I started working at Arch, but I have definitely learned more around legal systems, more around stigma, more around what sex work looks like. So I would say that I've become a lot more a little bit more knowledgeable around different movements, different organizations, and kind of how we can support folks. So I don't know if I've had a big shift, but I think that it's just trying to educate myself more, listen to people with lived experience, and trying to connect with community.
Mm-hmm. How about a shift in beyond the community table? You know, has there been any sign that, you know, the stigma is coming off? You know, I do remember that there was a community table, I think, at on December 17th a couple of years ago. There were some red umbrellas, which is, of course, a symbol for International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you're dealing with stakeholders and sex workers themselves, there's understandably a desire to take the stigma off. But what about the wider community?
Yeah. Well, I remember, I don't know if I was part of that display a few years ago, but we're doing something similar this year.
Mm-hmm.
So for December 7th, we're doing it this Friday, which is actually December 15th, but we're doing it in honor of December 17th, and we'll be handing out red umbrella cookies, and the red umbrella cookies also have information about December 17th, and we'll be in St. George's Square this upcoming Friday. And I think that that's kind of how we can start having those conversations. It's just as people are passing, we can hand out cookies, and as we were just like handing out cookies, or as we were in the community at the last community table that you mentioned, we had some great discussions with people just passing by and who maybe necessarily didn't know about this event, who didn't really know much about sex work. So you can really dive into some of those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it's just the wider community. I feel like folks have been receptive to learning more.
Good. I want to deal with this one big piece of it, because it seems like we can't have a talk about sex work without human trafficking. And my concern about that is sex workers aren't necessarily the victims of human trafficking, and similarly, people who are trafficked aren't necessarily being smuggled and being enslaved into sex work either. So, I think it's all, maybe you have a point of view on this, that is there maybe a simplification that we kind of want, almost instinctively want to combine the two into a single conversation, and should the discussion about sex work be separate from human trafficking, or is because there's that Venn diagram, they should be part and parcel of the same conversation?
Mm-hmm. I think that I would say that separate. Mm-hmm. Separate. So human trafficking and sex work is not the same. So sex work is job selling some form of sexual service, and trafficking is coerced or forced labor.
Right.
And sometimes when we conflate sex work with trafficking, it diminishes our effectiveness in fighting the real harms of human trafficking. But
right.
That's not to say that there isn't some gray area. Maybe some folks who entered sex work independently as their own decision, maybe there's been some coercion in there, or maybe on the other side, some folks who entered in a more coercive way have now moved on and are doing independent sex work. So
right.
I think that a lot of times it gets conflated because
we want easy
answers. We want easy things. We want it's more of like a savior complex around, everybody needs help, or you know what I mean? But there are some folks who are independently sex working, really very much enjoy it. And then there's other folks who are around that human trafficking piece who probably do need some additional supports and some help. And it's, how can we make sure that we're not painting everything with the same brush? How can we make sure that not all of the stories that we're hearing are related to human trafficking or specifically around sex work?
Yeah.
So I think that there's space for discussions, but I think that we also need to really set alongside that it's a separate entity. There is some gray area. There is a spectrum around sex work, but how can we make sure that we're tackling human trafficking and also walking alongside folks and supporting people who may be independently sex working?
Yeah, I think the judgment you're talking about is so key. You regularly kind of hear the argument, no little girl wants to grow up to be a sex worker. Well, nobody wants to grow up and be a garbage man either, but, both jobs seem perhaps necessary for, in society. Theoretically, you could do all your own garbage, but that's neither here nor there. I didn't mean to conflate the two, obviously, mm-hmm. but the point is that, people will find their way, and if sex work is something that speaks to them, they should feel free to engage in that area without the stigmatization. And the simplicity factor and the savior factor I think you're talking about is really key to this. And I think you made a good point there.
And there's some really great, amazing work that is being done in our community around human trafficking.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting, and it's very needed. So also just some great work around human trafficking, but we just need to make sure we're not painting it all with the same brush.
Right. Not every sex worker is a victim.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to ask people who work in the social service field, this is kind of like a last kind of philosophical question, but in terms of your work, and this is not just necessarily your work with SWAG, but everything you do with ARCH, what is it that makes you still get excited to get up and go to work every day? And when are the times when you maybe feel less excited and, perhaps are dreading a day at work? Or less excited, perhaps not, if not a full dread.
Yeah. I would say the things that get me excited is I get to work with some pretty awesome people in many different capacities. I have some great colleagues. I sit on some awesome community tables with some really great folks. I work with some super resilient women. And it's just really nice to kind of see that passion, see that power coming through, and to kind of lend my voice and lend my, I guess, my actions to that. So that's really exciting. I think that's probably what gets me going. And I think health equity is such an important thing. Everyone deserves access to healthcare services. I think it's important that everyone feels included and welcome in our community. And I really strive to try to work towards that. So that's what I get jazzed up about. now what gets me a little discouraged.
Yeah, good word.
I would say, you know, just stigma that continues in our community. And that stigma can present itself in many different ways. And a lot of folks have a lot of different barriers to accessing services and things. Mm-hmm. So I think the challenge is just when we're, you know, you're trying to make ground or you're trying to do some work and maybe necessarily you're not getting the community response that you're hoping, or you're not getting as many folks as you'd like to attend, or
Right. Different
things like that. So that can be a little bit challenging, but also knowing that the work is important and it needs to be carried through. Yeah, so I'd say that gets me excited is all the passion and awesome awesome folks in our community. And then the challenge is just, you know, continuing to fight when sometimes you feel like you're not necessarily making big steps.
Well, you certainly made a big step today, because I know you're an exceptionally busy woman, and I appreciate you taking the time and letting me unburden myself on top of it all. So, Sarah Wilmer, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And once again, that was Sarah Wilmer of Arch. There is a Facebook group for SWAG if you're interested in learning more, and you can find it at facebook.com/sexworkersallygroup/SWAG-Guelph-Wellington. And you can reach SWAG through their email at swagguelphwellington@gmail.com. You can also learn more about all of Arch's services and outreach projects by going to archguelph, all one word, .ca. And that's all for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where you'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.